Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Complaining for 10 Years. This week's show is sponsored by Linode and PDF Pen. Well, Manton, you know, you and I have known each other for quite a while now, over 10 years. And I thought maybe we should consider starting a podcast together.
Okay.
This might be a good idea that we have a lot of thoughts about the same kinds of things.
The funny thing is, actually, if you asked me that today and we had never started a podcast, I might say no, just because I feel so busy with everything else.
Well, the good news is, I mean, this idea of this name Core Intuition popped into my mind, and it looks like there's this domain, coreint.org, that we own. So okay. Maybe we should
That's
just
good.
Use
That's
that.
That's a good start.
Go with it.
It's been a while since we've talked. It does feel like I'm learning how to podcast again, because I have not done my timetable daily podcast in a couple of weeks. I've been so busy with a bunch of things. And we took off a week and we recorded one episode early. And it was, you know, it's like, it feels like it's been 2 or 3 weeks since we recorded.
Yeah. I mean, this is the summer. It's a little bit of summer, like, I had some vacation. I don't know. I had some flakiness. I don't know what happened, but it is good to be back. I actually, as we record this, it is September 5th, Wednesday. My kids just went back to school yesterday. So we've talked about this on the show before, Manton. This like weird summer schedule can throw lots of things into disarray. And the summer schedule here, at least, is over. We're back to normal. And I guess, Manton, I guess you're back to normal with a much smaller set of kids in school, right? At least under your direct care.
Right. New normal. My daughter's off to college. Yeah. It's kind of settling back into a routine, but it's certainly very different. But you're right. The summer is basically over. So a lot of things are going to kind of go back to, in terms of like working during the day, go back to normal.
Well, that's good. So what have you been working on? What's going on?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot has been going on. Actually, just this week, we shipped a new version of Sunlit. This is our companion app for micro.blog that's just for photos. We just shipped that. And there's so much else going on. But that was actually a really interesting kind of experience with the App Store, because I pushed through a couple bug fixes very quickly. And Apple, you know, to their credit, sometimes they actually review apps pretty quick.
Yeah,
pretty fast.
It's really nice when it happens.
So, you know, there was a little bit of hiccups because I thought you could, like, I had the app approved early, like a week early, and I thought I could submit a bug fix update without releasing the other one. So like put another bug fix in the queue for Apple to approve and then release that as the real version without risking cancel the previous version. It turns out you can't do that.
You can't do that.
That was possible. So there's always frustrations with the App Store still compared to if I distribute the app myself, I can do anything I want with the timing of the release. But overall, they were really quick to approve some of these updates. And so that was really nice.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, we've talked about this before. My all-time like amazing approval time was something like 21 minutes from submission to to like in review to actually approved to ready for sale. And I was like, what? Like, this is, I mean, way back when the App Store launched, I think I remember you, Manton, speculating that they may have had some kind of like arbitrary queue to avoid like setting, you know, some arbitrary delay to avoid setting expectations that it would be too fast.
You find your own bugs and work them out. Well, yeah,
exactly. Right. I definitely remember you speculating something along those lines. The 21-minute approval to sale proves that there's nothing like that, at least today.
Yep.
But it also maybe sort of suggests that there should be something like that, because as great as it is, it's really frustrating when you get that. And then, you know, the next day, you may be making even more trivial change, and it takes 2 days.
Mm-hmm. So Sunlit 2.0 wasn't 21 minutes, but it was quick. It was under 2 hours
from
submission to approval. And I was blown away. First of all, I actually expected they would reject the app. So I was just happy that it was approved. And the fact that it was so quick was just really nice also. And then I did two bug fix updates that were more in the like under 24 hours, which is still, you know, very good. But yeah, the 2 hours I was shocked by. And like I said, I actually thought there was a chance that it could be rejected because Apple seems to be getting a little more strict about apps that have some kind of paid component, like a subscription, outside the App Store. I have heard from developers who have trouble with this because it's easy to get a rejection that says you need to use in-app purchase and you're not, so you can't do anything. And so I've been increasingly worried about that, but so far, you know, I'm really happy that this one sailed through.
I had a similar, like, weird, you know, I'm getting a little bit more zen about App Store rejections. It used to be every time I saw an email from App Store or iTunes Connect, I would just get a little bit of a cold sweat. It's like, even if it's an approval, I would think, like, there's a chance this is going to be a refuse, you know, a rejection. And, you know, over the, especially in the earlier years, that sweat represented, there's a chance that they're not going to understand what I'm doing. There's a chance that there's a systemic breakdown. There's a chance that I'm not going to get through to anybody. There's a chance that there's bugs in Apple's system that are insurmountable. A lot of those concerns have diminished over the years. But also, I think I've just kind of gotten a little bit more chilled out. I had another rejection for FastScripts this past week or so. And it's frustrating because, you know, I had a bad week with FastScripts 2.7. And it's because there were these side effect bugs that I didn't anticipate, of course. And it was a situation where I saw one side effect bug reported and I thought, oh, yeah, obviously I need to fix that. I'll fix that and that'll be it. And then, like, you know, you ship it. And then, like, 30 minutes later, somebody else emails, yeah, there's this other nuanced thing. Oh, you go, crap, I got to fix that. And then I did this thing that I do sometimes, and it's sort of a reflection of my lack of discipline on the one hand and on my, like, hypervigilance on the other hand, is I released, like, 3 dot updates in the space of, like, 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like I just want to get things right as fast as I can. And this is what you do on the web all the time, you know? If you have 3 bugs you find in the course of 24 hours and you fix them, great. It's a little bit different. There's a different marketing message. It's, you know, people perceive it as annoying. I got one email from a customer who really didn't mince words. There's no excusing his behavior, to be honest. It was just a dismissive, angry, you know, maybe you should test your software before you ship it. And it's like, you know what? You know, find another company to be a customer of. I didn't say that, but I'm pretty good about my support responses. But sometimes I'm just like, you know what? I'm sorry, I disappointed you. Things happen. I'm trying my best. And I said, you know, I just said maybe the best thing would be for you to go back to the previous version since it's been more reliable for you.
Well, that's frustrating.
But, you know, anyway, this all culminated in finally. Let me see if I got the numbers right. My latest version of FastScripts, which has been stable now for, I think, a week or so, 2.7.3. But this was one of those situations where it's like, aha, here we go, finally, 2.7.3. And I ship it up to Apple thinking, you know, they must be used to approving me by now after like 3 updates in 24 hours. And then I get that. It's so funny, too. This reflects a shortcoming of App Store review. It's the same erroneous rejection that I've had before, which is, you know, FastScripts ships with no scripts. And by default, it just shows you scripts that Apple bundles with the OS. And these scripts have not been updated. I should probably stop showing them, but they have not been updated in years, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But it's just the standard behavior of the Apple script menu, which I emulate in FastScripts, is to show the standard system bundled scripts. So this is probably the third time over the course of the App Store with FastScripts that I've gotten a rejection because, quote unquote, my scripts don't work or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's because they're running Apple's built-in scripts and they find one that behaves poorly and then they blame me for it.
That's funny. And I mean, it's not funny.
It is. But it's sort of ironic, right? But and I ended up... actually, on the latest, I think it was 2.7.2 that I got that. And then I I've gotten this Zen mode now where I just reply very politely. You know, I think you'll find that the same script run with Apple's script menu or Apple's script editor fails in the same way. And so this time I got smart, maybe, I don't know. See, in my imaginary world, Apple would have a little comments field for their reviewers where they would keep a constant like list of reminders to their reviewers. Like, note, right. This was rejected erroneously because of this. Don't do that again. So I just added it myself in the little review notes, you know, that you can you can put there. Yeah. But I don't know.
Interesting. I wonder if, because I put a few things in the review notes too. For Microdotblog, I give Apple a test account so they don't have to deal with any of the hassles of having an account. And it follows a couple people. And we use that in Sunlit too. And I wonder if having that kind of stuff in the review notes just actually helps quite a bit.
Yeah.
For someone that's a brand new, has no idea what's going on, because they can just look at that. They can copy and paste a couple of things, maybe see that the app doesn't crash.
Yep.
And then move on to the next app they have to review. That's a good thing to keep in mind.
It is. And I have mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, I feel like I should do everything I can to help frame the app for the review to be positive. And on the other hand, diametrically opposed, I have the sense that adding any comments will invite more scrutiny.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
You know,
you don't want to make it more complicated than it really is.
Yeah. You don't want to be like, well, here's why this is a special case.
Here's five paragraphs about how the app works because it's so confusing. Yeah. I mean, the App Store, you know, we complain about the App Store. We've been complaining for 10 years. I think I've been complaining more than anyone. And I know people get tired of hearing that sometimes, but there are things about the App Store that are frustrating. As much as it has improved, there are still these just basic things. And like the timing of releases is a big deal. Like I said, you know, it wasn't really the end of the world at the end with this week of releasing Sunlit, but Sunlit 2.2 like was a major, is like the biggest update we've ever done. And, you know, it brings like an Instagram like timeline to photos and following people and commenting. And it's like a huge release, probably should have been 3.0. And so I wanted to make a big deal about it's out, everybody get it. And I have a couple blog posts lined up and I'm going to tell some press folks, hopefully, if I have time. But because of this weird timing, the release ended up shipping, quote unquote, like a day early, and it was the wrong version. And then there were two follow-up bug fix updates. And it's like, whatever, you know, that's fine. It's just software. Like, people are happy to get the bug fix updates, and they don't really care if it was released a day early. But it messed up the whole timing of what I wanted to be a big release. And it's just because the App Store has weird quirks like this. You know, if I was releasing my own software, there's no way any of this timing issue would have happened, because I would have pressed the button and released it when I was ready.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, that's... It's interesting for me to think about how much I have adapted to App Store thinking over these past 8 years. I mean, I know everybody listening who only does iOS development is totally familiar with this, and you know, but those of us who had to like transition from the Mac and thinking like every decision about when and how to release is up to us. It's been a long, slow adaptation, but I don't know. I guess I'm kind of crushed, beaten down. I guess I'm just okay.
Yeah, just kind of accepted it. All right, this week we are happy to have back sponsoring the show, PDF Pen from Smile. PDF Pen is the ultimate tool for editing PDFs. Using PDF Pen, you can go paperless with scanning and OCR. You can mark up and highlight PDFs, search and redact sensitive info such as account numbers, correct text in PDFs without the originals, insert, remove, and reorder pages, move and adjust images, record and playback audio annotations, or grab PDF Pen Pro to do even more, such as create fillable PDF forms, even automatically, create an edit table of contents, convert websites into PDFs, add and edit document permissions. Learn more about PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro at smilesoftware.com/podcast.
Manton, you know, I love PDF Pen. I've been using it for years and years. And I'm always curious, because it's such a great app. It has so many features. I'm always curious to learn something new about this app that I didn't even know it could do. Smile is always doing such a great job showing and explaining what's great about their apps. If you go to smilesoftware.com/podcast and then click at the bottom on the learn more, they've done something really ingenious, which is they've used these animated GIFs or GIFs, depending on your flavor. To be honest, when I go to a site and they want to show me like a long video, I almost never watch it. But this is great because they got this list of all their new features in PDF Pen 10 and PDF Pen Pro 10. And there's a little paragraph about it, a little headline, and then there's just this constantly cycling animated image of what the feature does. And I just think that's such an ingenious way of showing really quickly and easily what's new, what you can do with this app. If you have never checked out PDF Pen, really, you owe it yourself to try it out. Give it a spin. I'm almost positive that if you do anything with PDFs, you're going to be kicking yourself for not trying it earlier. So go to smilesoftware.com/podcast. Thanks again to Smile and PDF Pen for sponsoring the show.
So Daniel, as I mentioned, a bunch of stuff is going on in the Micro.blog world. And one of the things that I have been looking at is Android. And that I said that in a way that makes it sound like I'm becoming an Android developer. That's not true. Although I did download the Android Studio for the Mac. I think I've downloaded and deleted this a couple times over the years.
This is like a confessional session here. Tell me, Martin, right. How else have you sinned over the years?
But there's a new app that someone on Micro.blog, Belle Cooper, has written. And she started as just like a quick little hack, and it has turned into a really nice, like full-featured Micro.blog app for Android. And it's open source, and it's only been out for a couple weeks. But she was on our Micro Monday podcast talking a little bit about it. And so, you know, I wanted to build it from source. And luckily with Android, you don't actually have to. I mean, you can just install apps from other people if they distribute them, which is, you know, we're talking about App Store frustrations. Mm-hmm. That is the big thing I'm jealous of with Android is you can send out betas through the Google Play Store or just a direct, you know, side-loaded, just download this and install it on your phone. And I love that. But anyway, I got kind of lost in the weeds a little with this Android stuff, but I don't know. Have you ever? Sometimes I feel like I should know a little more about Android development.
It's funny. I have somehow inoculated myself to any interest in Android, and it's partly because I'm just like a, you know, sort of like a one platform, one ecosystem kind of person, but that's not really fair to dismiss my pursuits as that because, you know, I develop stuff. I develop my own website for what it's worth. I work on JavaScript stuff for my rich text editor and Mars Edit. Mm-hmm. I write Python scripts. I can kind of like say on the one hand, like I just do Apple stuff. And on the other hand, I'm like, you know what? I've actually explored a lot of stuff over the years. And by contrast to the Android lack of interest, at least years ago, I got to the point of like downloading Visual Studio from Microsoft.
Okay.
And, you know, I've played with, for instance, the Cocotron stuff that lets you adapt mm-hmm. Objective-C Mac stuff to Windows. You know, that said, I was always pretty much like, yeah, I don't think I'm ever really going to ship a Windows app. But the truth is, I don't even know the first thing about how you would start developing an Android app. And I didn't know, for example, that you can even do it. I mean, it makes sense now that you say it, that you can do it from a Mac. But if you would have asked me, what do you need to do to get started? I would have been like, well, I'm sure there's something.
The Chromebook?
Yeah, you got to do something with Google. But it's kind of fascinating to me, the lack of curiosity I have. And even with the advent of, you know, I think a lot of my lack of curiosity has been because I don't personally think I ever want to use Android as my platform. Mm-hmm. Part of it is the stench of Java from, mm-hmm. you know, I'm being very judgmental here and I apologize to people.
But I'm nodding, you know, along.
I'm being very judgmental while I am aware that other people don't have the same reaction to Java that I have. But then even with the advent of Kotlin, which is, as I understand it, a remarkably similar language to Swift, I think when I learned about that, it ticked off a little box in my head, like, maybe one day you will possibly look into what it is to make Android apps.
Yeah.
But it's just not enough to add up to me even having the curiosity to give it a look. So I'm kind of fascinated by that.
And this app that I wanted to build, it's called Pico. It was written in Kotlin. And I had the same kind of, you got to go back, whatever, 15, 20 years now. But like when Java was first a thing, I did a whole bunch of stuff in Java. Yeah. Like I was writing little applets for web pages. I was doing, you know, even like desktop style stuff with some I think Swing or AWT or a couple of those Java frameworks. I did a whole bunch of Java stuff. I don't want to go back to Java. There's many languages I don't want to go back to that I actually have some good experience, like years of experience in. And Java is one of those. And it sounds like a stupid thing. Well, I'm not going to touch that platform because it's Java. But that's a legitimate thing. Like, I want to enjoy my time programming because I have limited time. And, you know, I don't actually really like programming that much. You know, I like building apps. And if the programming part is a chore, then it's less likely I'll stick with it and build something that I'm proud of. So that that's not nothing using a language that you that you like. So Kotlin is that's interesting to me.
Yeah,
and I think you can even build parts of an Android app in Go now, and I don't think you can build the UI. Perhaps I'm not completely sure on that, and it's actually probably evolved a lot since I looked at this, like maybe a year or more ago. That appeals to me quite a bit too. I like Go, and actually I could, if I ever really used Go, I could see doing a lot more server stuff with Go, and that would be appealing to have one language that I used on a couple different platforms.
Yeah, I don't mind, like I said, I don't mind using a couple different languages, but it's funny, I described it as the stench of Java. I guess it's a visceral, you know, reaction from my experience of using it before and finding it cumbersome and frustrating. And it's the same feeling I have about C++. It's a very similar feeling. I know that they're dramatically different languages, but it's just this, like, I don't know, it's just this, like, class inheritance emphasis that really, as a person who has become so comfortable with Apple's relative lack of emphasis on subclassing, and class oriented notation, I don't know. It seems like, and but you know, I like languages like Python, and I even like enough. Like, I'd rather write in PHP than in Java or C++. To be honest,
I might also. That's maybe more of a toss up. I've also done a lot of PHP back in the early web days. But you're right with the class, like, I when I think of Java, actually, and C++ to an extent, but I actually kind of think of like one of those old posters that's like the Java class hierarchy, and it's like you put it on the wall and it's huge. And in the C++, most of my C++ experience was large frameworks, things like PowerPlant from MetroWorks, huge class hierarchies, right? And so, yeah, subclassing all the way down. And I, at the time, you know, great. But yeah, it's not something that I'm interested in going back to necessarily.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly what, I should look more at the Pico source code to see what a brand new, you know, Android app might look like in terms of the source. I just quickly glanced at it. And it's still small enough where I think that someone that's new to Android, like me, could probably get a good sense of it. It's not like huge. I mean, the app's only 2 weeks old, right? So like, it's not hundreds and hundreds of files where you couldn't wrap your head around it. And I would probably learn something from that. And like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be doing any Android development, but there are there are parts of that platform that are appealing. And just all of it, unfortunately.
And I think, you know, I'm aware also that many of our listeners who are developers are familiar or even expert with both iOS and Android.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have to take a moment to appreciate that this is another one of those many instances where being independent and working on my own stuff protects me in a way from having to be more diversely skilled than I am. I mean, I don't want to diminish my skills too much, but like I know a lot of people who know Kotlin and Java for Android because as part of it sort of comes with the territory of being a highly qualified mobile engineer, right? Mm-hmm. And there aren't a lot of people I know who put themselves out there as strictly iOS consultants anymore. It seems to me like these days, if you're going to be a consultant for hire, you have to know Android. And similarly, I remember like remarking years ago at Cocoa Heads, our local meetup here, and it's around the world, but our Boston version of it, back when it was just Mac before the iPhone, we had a bunch of people who would come to the meetings because you know they were people who had to use Windows, and it's just always been a privilege to only develop for the Mac or only develop for iOS. And you know, I sort of have a mental list, Manton. We come back to this every once in a while, like reasons to not go get a regular job. Now, granted, there are a lot of regular jobs I could get that would keep me safely in the, iOS only or Mac only sphere. But sure, there's always going to be something you don't want to work on. And, you know, and for better and for worse, if there's something I don't want to work on, I don't have to. And, you know, maybe that's stuff sometimes that I should be working on. But, you know, I see people still talking about C++ problems, talking about Java problems, talking about Kotlin, talking about Android, frustrations with Android Studio. Never have to worry about those things. Not my concern.
Yeah, it is an interesting difference, because if you were working a regular job and you had a boss, even a small company, you know, sometime over the last 6 months, they might have come to you and said, you know, Daniel, I like what you're doing with Mars Edit. But, you know, you have this JavaScript experience. I think we need to rewrite Mars Edit in React Native. Like, that's the latest thing. Like, and that might be a thing. It's like the team is working on React Native now. And, you know, that we're going to do this for Mars Edit going forward. And it'll be cross-platform. And, yes, you're going to have to throw out how many years of Objective-C and Swift. But like, that's a luxury that you don't have to, worry about.
So chalk that one up to the list. One of these days, I'm going to have to make a big master list of all the benefits so I can, like, consult it in my times of weakness. All right, folks, back sponsoring the show this week, our friends at Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or to serve as the backend for your iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. With Linode, you can get a server running in under a minute. They've been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003, and their plans start at the 1 gigabyte level for only $5 a month. Linode has 10 global data centers equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs, and their plans range from that low $5 a month plan up to higher memory plans starting at 16 gigabytes. All of these plans come with the full control you expect with a VM that includes support for Docker containers, encrypted disks, VPNs, etc. And they offer 24/7 friendly support that's even available on holidays. They also offer a special promo code for our listeners, and the easiest way to take advantage of it is just to go to linode.com/coreint, and that will automatically apply the coreint 2018 promo code, which gets you a $20 credit. If you think about it, at that $5 a month entry-level plan, that's equivalent to 4 free months. So you owe it to yourself to try Linode. See how great it is. See how easy it is to set up a server and get your own stuff hosted on your own virtual machine on the web. Go to linode.com/coreint. Thanks again.
Yeah, I continue to be so happy with Linode. All the micro.blog infrastructure is running on a bunch of Linode instances, and they're just rock solid. I just never have any problems with them. You know, I'm constantly, you know, I'm SSHing in, I'm doing different things in the terminal. I've got web servers, I've got database servers of different kinds, and it's just really stable. They have a good product, works well, prices are fair, and they become even more fair if you use this coupon. So if you want to learn more, go to lenum.com/corient. If you haven't signed up for Lenum before, I just can't recommend them enough. They have great support. When I've had to email them, they respond really quickly and they're really helpful. They don't like talk down to you like you don't know what you're doing, or they don't, you know, like miss your question. They've been actually helpful, like really good support. Some of the best that I've ever had from a hosting company. So thanks so much to Linode for sponsoring the show. Again, learn more and save some money at lenode.com/corient.
All right, Manton. There's some big news in the Apple world since we last recorded, and it's been talked about by a lot of other podcasts, and I think I would concur with the general assessment from some of the podcasts I listen to that perhaps the biggest news is, again, just that this actually leaked. And what I'm alluding to actually is the 9to5 Mac got pictures of the new iPhones that are slated to be announced. Geez, I think it's like a week from now. And they also got a picture of the new watch. And this is like some big deal stuff. This isn't like when somebody gets like a vector drawing of like a concept. This looks like marketing images that Apple spent a lot of time making for the eventual consumption of the public, but not for the consumption of the public 2 weeks before they make the big reveal.
So my first question is there any chance that Apple put these out there for someone to find on purpose and they're fake? I think no. I think these look like extremely legitimate, right?
Yeah. You're not posing the sort of more obvious question that many people have posed, which is whether Apple has put this out there to legitimately stoke interest.
You're posing
the different question, which is Apple playing a little game with people to do a little fake out?
Yeah, at some point I feel like Apple might try to do that just to keep people on their toes. And the reveal, like the way Apple has a whole show about marketing this stuff and how they want millions of people to watch these events live, there's so much riding on these events, sort of. Mm-hmm. Like on one hand, yes, and as Apple fans, we love this big reveal. But on the other hand, it doesn't matter. They're going to sell a million of these phones. I don't think it's going to make any difference whatsoever in the coverage of these phones or the number they can sell. But so, yeah, at some point, I wonder if they'll start playing games with the developer community as people get so clever about trying to figure stuff out. But in this case, no, these look real and kind of a bummer for Apple that they got out. But on the other hand, this is just how it goes.
the thing is, these look too good to be fake outs, and it would be a lot of effort put into making something really good that doesn't exist. So if there was a fake element to this, I think it would be something like, if I have this right, the naming, the iPhone XS, right? Everyone's laughing about that. The naming has been inferred by the file name that was obtained, I think. And
so we don't know how to pronounce it necessarily.
Right. And to be fair, if Apple was going to pull a fake out, that would be the kind of thing that they could fake out and put a lot of effort into marketing images and then seed it with a fake name. But I don't think that's Apple has
or a code name. I mean, it could like you could have file names that are real URLs that have a code name in them until the launch. Like that could be something like it could, the designer that worked on this may not know the final name. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah.
Unlikely, but it's possible.
I really, just to get back to your question, I really just think Apple has so much work to do on so many fronts And even with the massive number of employees they have, they do not have people around for whom it is a valuable use of time to quote unquote play with the developer community or the, you know, the public. And, you know,
I agree.
I agree with you basically that it's hard to gauge whether this can hurt Apple financially. It seems like your assessment is basically right, that they're going to make a majillion of these and they're going to sell a majillion of these, and it's not going to matter that much whether the public ended up having a sneak peek 2 weeks in advance. But I still think it's damaging. Let's just say at the very least, it's damaging to morale of the people who work on these products, right? Like, there is some damage there. And I know from working at Apple, and lots of people listening, even if you haven't worked for Apple, if you've worked on anything where there's any element of surprise, it's damaging when the news comes out early. And I don't know, maybe a good metaphor is like, is there any financial loss, or is it any real like long-term damage done if you're throwing a surprise party for your best friend and somebody tells them ahead of time? No, you still have the party. They lose some of that surprise. You all have a good time, hopefully. But everyone would agree it wasn't as good as it could have been, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, maybe, but like, I look at, first of all, Apple is a $1 trillion company, literally, and I'm not going to lose any sleep over whether their surprise is ruined. Like, I'm sorry, they're a huge company. I have real things that I'm working with in my tiny company that are much more important to me than whether Apple's surprise is ruined a week ahead of time. But also, I don't think you can measure this, and I think that you get so much press out of these quote-unquote leaks that there's good stuff that comes with that too. I mean, as an example, I was talking earlier about how the surprise of the new version of Sunlit for Microblog was ruined and it came out a day early. But the flip side of that is I had tons of people that are passionate about Microblog writing about it, blogging about it early. I mean, I'm not mad about that. I mean, that's a good problem to have, that people cared enough about the app that a day before it was supposed to be out, they are sending feedback and they're posting links to it and talking about how this is a great release, right? That's good. That's not bad. So the timing got all messed up, but we can't be too picky sometimes with this stuff. And I think Apple, hopefully they'll just roll with this. I don't think it's a big deal. And there's still a lot of surprises still kind of in store. They have other things they're going to announce. And we don't actually know exactly what the name of the stuff is. And I'm shocked that it's XS or 10S because, I mean, we talked last year about how X was a terrible, terrible name, especially pronouncing it 10 because it like locks you into all these different problems. Like, is there ever going to be an iPhone 9?
Right.
Is there going to be an 11? XS is really, really bad in terms of like pronunciation. It sounds like the word XS.
Yeah.
It's clunky to say. If they start calling it 10S next week, then that completely, they're both letters. Like, why is one pronounced? And it's just terrible, terrible naming in my opinion. But so that'll be a surprise. Like, what do they actually call this thing?
I am resigned now to the fact that Apple will perpetually choose product names that are mock-worthy and yet go on to become completely standard, normal parts of human, you know. Nobody laughs about the name iPad anymore. And when Apple announced iPad, it was like a nearly unanimous, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember that? It was like the whole like sanitary napkin thing. And
or like, another example in that kind of line is the Nintendo Wii. People thought that was a ridiculous name, but they, you know, we got used to that pretty quick.
It didn't matter.
Actually, MacBook, most people hated.
Most people hated
coming
that,
from PowerBook, which was such a great brand.
Yep.
X is a little different because I think most people still pronounce it iPhone X.
Yeah.
And so despite Apple saying, no, no, it's 10 for the last year, I think it does create a bit of a problem with XS if people still pronounce it
wrong. I think it does too, but I also think people are overthinking the negative connotations of XS. And people are just going to be like, haha, it's like XS. But that's, nobody's going to say, well, I can't buy that phone because I don't want to be too excessive. You know?
No. You it's know? Just it's, like, it's just awkward.
It's word. Awkward, but it's the thing. That's the thing is almost nobody really talks about, I don't know. Even I am, you know, as a phone aficionado, I use my phone all the time. I love it. I talk to other people about iPhones. Don't often say that, like, even the word iPhone 10. You know, just talk about our phones.
Yeah.
Talk about this, that, the other thing. Talk about apps on the phones. Talk about features on the phones. Talk about Find My Friends. Talk about, you know, how the phones, you know, handoff. Things that are you do with your phone. And I think maybe the name of the phone doesn't matter that much. And maybe that's part of what Apple... Because, you know, I think you and I both listened to the recent episode of the talk show with Jason Snell, I think, and John Gruber. And they're talking about the name. I think they were talking about the naming a little bit and how both, they were both like surprised. Like, I think a week before, John and maybe Marco Arment, I'm sorry, I'm spacing out, were talking about like how it definitely wouldn't be iPhone XS, right? And then here it is. But
yeah, I think it was Jason and John that were talking about how it couldn't possibly be XS or 10S. And
right.
I think it was Jason who has talked about it should. This is the time where they drop the numbers. Yeah, it's the new iPhone,
right?
Just like they don't really have iPad numbers anymore. Don't have numbers for MacBooks. This is the time they drop the numbers. This is the transition. We'll see. I mean, it's still possible next week they could say it's the new iPhone or it's the new iPhone 10. It's still possible.
So I remember why I was thinking about that talk show episode. It's because they had a good reminiscence. I think John was remembering sort of laughing with, why am I blanking, marketing Schiller, with Phil Schiller, kind of joking with him about how it must have been like a pretty big decision to come up with the name iPhone 10 spelled with an X. And, you know, just from the anecdote, it kind of got the impression that Phil was like, oh yeah, we thought about that a lot. And just knowing that they thought about it a lot means there is a trajectory plan, you know? And if the trajectory plan is iPhone XS includes iPhone XS, then you know what? They thought about it and they decided it didn't matter. And I'll be curious. Maybe it is something different than that. Maybe this is just a code name in the URL. The more fascinating thing to me, Manton, is I opened this segment sort of saying that the most interesting thing to me was that the leak happened and how it happened, et cetera, et cetera. I am remarkably uninterested in... a new phone this year. And
I couldn't care less.
I'm usually, for several years, I've been on the new phone every year plan. And I'm so happy with my iPhone 10. And maybe this will be like, you know, we'll come back, cite this if I instantly purchase one, whatever the new one is. But for the first time in a long time, I don't anticipate there being a new feature of this phone that makes me say I have to have that. And we'll see.
I agree. The iPhone 10 is a really, really good phone. And it's also, let's not forget, it's a $1,000 computer also.
Yeah, or $1,200 in a more typical configuration.
Exactly. So like, and I'm not in the habit of buying new computers every year.
Right.
And that's what this is. So there's no way I'm going to get the new one. But this, I feel like this is brand new. I feel like the phone I have, I got it on day one last year. I feel like it's still brand new. And so, yeah, there's no way I'm going to upgrade this year. You know, if people want to upgrade every year, great. That's, you know, go for it. But I don't think there's any feature they could add that would make me upgrade. I love this phone.
Right. Now, by contrast, don't I remember learning that you have a Gen 1 Apple Watch?
See, that is a different story. And I do have a Gen 1, like Series 0, you know, what we call it. It's the original. I got it again on day one 4 years ago, maybe. I mean, it's pretty getting pretty old, 3 or 4 years ago. And it was great until it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it was great. Did everything I needed to do, which is not really apps because it's too slow for apps, but like fitness stuff, telling time, notifications, just the basic Apple Watch stuff. Totally great. And then sometime over the summer, the battery just like dropped off a cliff. Like it just, it went from being completely fine where I could charge it, you know, I charge it in the morning for a few minutes or at night, not a big deal, to it will not last through the day, many days, even if it's completely charged in the morning. So I don't know, but it's just how batteries are, I guess. But that that makes it, it really takes it from being perfectly fine to actually really need to upgrade it. Also, new version of watchOS will not run on it. So kind of the writing is on the wall. This watch is not going to last much longer.
So does it look like this is, I mean, it seems kind of like nice timing, like in stark contrast to the poor timing of Apple's MacBook lineup updates with respect to your daughter's going to college. Mm-hmm. This seems like pretty ideal timing for a Series 0 Apple Watch that's just finally going kaput.
I think so. I'm still going to be kind of grumbling a little bit about upgrading it because it's a watch. Like, I shouldn't have to buy new watches that often. But I think this will be a huge upgrade. And, you know, I'll see what they announce. The leaked photos show a much bigger screen, but I guess basically the same size of watch, which is really fascinating. I mean, I have no problems with the current Apple Watch size. If they can make the screen bigger without sacrificing, you know, the weight or the feel of it, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But the other option is to save some money and just get whatever Series 3 or whatever the, you know, slightly older, cheaper one is.
No, that's a great point. It might bring down, I mean, for one thing, this new Apple Watch might be like the iPhone 10 of Apple Watches. You know, it might be the one that they frame like we decided to bring you next year's Apple Watch this year. And so it could be, the reason that thought comes to mind is because I can't really picture even the current generation of Apple Watch being reduced in price that dramatically. But if this new one is that much better, then it's going to have to be a lot more expensive than the current one.
Right. So I may not go for the more expensive.
I don't know. But, you know, I'm looking at my watch, and a testament to Apple's design, I don't really think about the screen being as much smaller than the watch as it is because of the way that they use that black background. And I'm looking at my watch, and it looks like the screen goes pretty close to the edge, even if it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a really nice illusion.
But yeah, I don't know. I bought this new Apple Watch a year ago, I think, and it was pretty good timing for me then because I like you had a Series 0 Apple Watch, and I was driven. It's funny, I'm looking at it now too, and I was driven to upgrade it because I dropped it, and then it still worked even though it had a gaping hole in the corner. Wow. But then slowly but surely, and I'm looking at it now, this black like hole, this black spot, this perfect sphere of no pixels grew gradually, so that now it takes up almost a quarter of the screen. So it's a useless watch. I don't know, maybe I should find somebody who is blind who could use it. It's like this thought came to me recently, like whenever I complain about a screen, I'm thinking like, well, that would still be perfectly useful to somebody who is blind. And it got me thinking, actually, like, why don't they make, why doesn't that, you know, it's probably just too small of a market. But Apple could, I was thinking about the reason this first thought came to mind is I was thinking about the MacBook Air, which has been celebrated as having so many good qualities, but it still, like, annoyingly doesn't have a Retina screen. And I thought, you know what, that's a perfect Mac for somebody who's blind, because what do they care how good the screen is? And it actually got me thinking, like, an ideal Mac for somebody who is blind would just be a flat keyboard, right?
Hmm. It's interesting because you could save a lot of money on these devices without the screen.
Right, exactly.
Like the screen is a huge cost. Yeah. That is really interesting. And like you said, it's probably not a big enough market where they would have a special phone without a screen.
Right. Yeah.
Or but a small like screen. But yeah, that's interesting.
The voiceover only line of products.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be frustrating if anybody was ever... I mean, there is an aspect, I think, for most people who have vision difficulties that... There are times in their life when it's very helpful to have somebody sighted assisting
right.
them.
Right.
So that's probably where it breaks down. But like mm-hmm. for a power user who's just like, you know what? I know what I want from this voiceover device. the other thing that came to mind is like a Mac Mini is a perfect home computer for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think of the space it saves. If you don't need a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, that's kind of a sidetrack.
Well, and Apple has built devices that don't have screens before, like the iPod is like the biggest example.
Oh, right. And, yeah. That's a good point.
That's just music playback, so it's simpler and, you know, mm-hmm. it appeals to everybody that doesn't want to have to deal with a screen. But you could certainly see, maybe not a Mac, but you could certainly see like a watch
right.
that doesn't really need a screen, that you're mm-hmm. talking to it with Siri only, you know, as right. Siri gets better. You could see... that being a thing.
Mm-hmm. And I guess,
you know, talking to the smart speaker is really that, yeah, right?
That's right.
It's a computer without a screen.
It's true. Anyway, it's an interesting sidetrack, but yeah, I don't mm-hmm. know if anybody does know somebody who could make use of my Series Zero watch with a very badly damaged screen and a gaping hole in the corner. Just let me know.
You'll make you a deal.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the prices now. New Apple Watch is $330 with cellular, it's $400. And then they still sell the Series 1 for quite a bit less. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking this new big screen thing is going to be the same price. I don't know. I could see it starting at $400.
Yeah.
If it costs more. Like, I could even see, like, if your example is right, where this is the watch from next year, from the future, brought back today, and everyone needs one. I could see it being like cellular only, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Could it be gold only?
I don't think it could be gold only because there's a lot of people that are going to want the bigger screen.
And they don't want gold.
And they don't want gold. Yeah. And like the whole thing with Apple Watch is fashion and style and a bunch of colors. So I don't think it would be gold only, but I could definitely see them having a Series 4 that's kind of regular and then the Series 4 Special Edition X, Series X, who knows, whatever they call those things. But I could see that. And I'll probably tune out at that point. Like, I love my Apple Watch. I wear it every single day. But it's not something I feel justified in spending a lot of money on.
Yeah.
So, like, I bought one extra band for $50.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, it's really useful, but it's not worth $400 or $500 probably.
Well, it's a really good device. Nowadays, the iPhone series or the Apple Watch Series 3 is a really good device, and it's the kind of thing, like you say, it's going to be really good as it is, you know, even if Apple makes something better. So I think I sort of agree with you that, like, that's part of the reason I don't think I'll be motivated, like, to jump at a new watch. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the kind of device that you can... A lot of us can fairly comfortably stay like a generation behind and mm-hmm. still be really gratified by the functionality.
Yeah. And the battery, I think this is going to be a long-term issue that they should have a solution for, because the battery should last longer than this. And if they can't last longer, they need to have a reasonable upgrade cost.
Yeah.
To, like, you know, like we had a Series Zero Apple Watch that had a cracked screen, and it cost so much to replace the screen. It was only like $50 more to buy a brand new Apple Watch.
No, that's exactly,
We bought a brand new Apple Watch instead, right? And we have this cracked iPhone, like, don't know what to do with, sitting in a drawer. And, sorry, cracked...
Apple Watch, yeah.
Cracked Apple Watch.
Well, that's exactly why I have mine, because I did the same thing. I cracked my Apple Watch. I was like, oh, it still works, but how do I get it repaired? And then it was like, at the time, I remember it was, there was a deal at Best Buy where I could literally buy the exact same watch new from Best Buy for the same price Apple would charge to quote-unquote repair it. And I was like, you know, I'm just you know, keep it. That's fine.
I would love, if I spent $400 a watch or more, I would love to be able to go to the Apple store when the battery dies and pay, I don't know, less than $100.
Yeah.
$50,
I think, maybe. $50 sounds fair.
To get a new battery. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know how much they cost in materials and time to take these things apart, but it feels like that should be something you can upgrade on a watch.
Yeah.
Keep that watch for quite a while.
I think that's a direction that if Apple wants to innovate on this front, they should be looking at that. So hopefully they will.
Well, we'll find out soon enough on these names and prices and all this kind of stuff and new stuff too. I mean, I think Apple will probably talk about more than just the new iPhone and the Apple Watch next week. So I think we'll probably record the next show right after the event. So next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about our reaction to the new Apple stuff. Should be fun.
Sounds good. And I'll also just add, I don't think Apple would go out of their way to send out false information, but I do think sometimes if the information gets out there that it might affect what they choose to talk about and how they choose to frame it. Mm-hmm. So see whether it seems like anything like that has happened. I don't know how we would tell, but it's going to be an exciting week and we'll talk to you all next week about what we think about it. See how it goes.
Cool. Talk to you next week.